I'm a riddle in nine syllables. That's how the poet Sylvia Plath described being pregnant. And the novelist Margaret Atwood in The Handmaiden's Tale.
I'm a cloud congealed around a central object, the shape of a pear, which is hard and more real than I am, and glows red within its translucent wrapping. Inside it is a space, huge as the sky at night, and dark and curved like that, though black-red rather than black. Pinpoints of light swell, sparkle, burst, and shrivel within it, countless as stars.
This is The Body Sphere with Amanda Smith. Clouds, riddles, to describe something that's been done for millennia by millions and millions of us. And it is the most mundane and the most extraordinary thing the human body can do, to create within it, over 9 months, another human being. And yes, while it's women who carry the new life, we all, male and female, begin our existence this way. Chitra Ramaswamy is a writer based in Edinburgh, and it's these 9 months, so commonplace and so mysterious, that she details in 9 chapters in a book called Expecting, The Inner Life of Pregnancy. Now, one reviewer has suggested that this may be the first book about pregnancy, not to mention folic acid.
I love that description, and I think it sort of acknowledges that so many books about pregnancy and birth that exist are, you know, in some way prescriptive. They're trying to tell women what to do and when to do it, when to start taking folic acid and when your baby's going to be the size of a peanut or a marrow or an avocado, or that has its place. But what I really wanted to do was talk about what it actually feels like from the inside, what it does to you, and some of the kind of philosophical and aesthetic questions and meditations that it throws up.
Well, aside from the task of getting pregnant and having a baby, when and why did you also decide to write about the 9 months?
I became pregnant and I thought, what an interesting project it would be to track my own pregnancy and try and write a book that pays tribute to this very ordinary and yet extraordinary experience that actually, once you start delving into the literature, it really hasn't been written about very much at all.
So how did you remember the detail? You know, when you ask other women about being pregnant, they often have forgotten a lot. Did you keep a diary? How did you keep track?
Yeah, it's so true. Everyone talks about baby brain and pregnancy brain, and your energy is so taken up that this thing that your body's undertaking is so sort of huge and overwhelming. There's little time or, you know, headspace for anything else. And that was certainly true. So I had this idea and I sort of, you know, listlessly tried to, in the midst of kind of all this hormonal sickness, tried to write a few lines. And I did, to say I kept a diary would be a little bit generous, but I certainly made a few kind of field notes, if you like. But more than that, just all the way through my pregnancy, I kept thinking about this idea, and I read quite a lot, not so much manuals or polemics or histories of childbirth or anything like that, but poetry and literature and essayists. And really, once the baby was born, I think my son was about 8 weeks old, and I started to write.
Yes, you quote everyone from Sylvia Plath to Tolstoy, really, along the way of this. Can I get you to read a little, Chitra, from during the first trimester?
Absolutely, I'd love to. How could something the size of a mere kidney bean be wreaking such havoc? There was almost no weight to it. It took up virtually no space in the world, yet it was a burden, and a secret one at that. I had lived in this house of flesh and blood for years, and now all of a sudden I knew nothing about it. How was it doing what it was doing without my understanding? How had I gone so long knowing so little? For the first time ever, I thought I could actually sense my organs at work, as though I'd opened up a wristwatch to peer at the cogs turning inside. Now and then, a series of what felt like electrical impulses juddered through my uterus, lighting up that dark, wet, under-the-sea cave with what felt like forked flashes of lightning. Such drama, such mundanity.
Well, there's probably never a time when you are more connected to and confounded by your own body than during pregnancy. What did you find out about your corporeal self?
Yeah, so much. And at the same time, in a way, the biggest thing that I found out was how little I knew, which is sort of, I found a very characteristic experience of pregnancy. You know, you would talk to other pregnant women and everyone would walk around going, I can't believe I didn't know this. You know, that we'd seen pregnant women walking down the streets or thought of our mothers carrying us, and it had never really occurred to us what that entailed. So I learned all sorts of stuff, you know, from the very kind of physiological detail of suddenly getting to a stage in pregnancy where my hair stopped falling out, which is what happens is, you know, your hormonal levels change. You're washing your hair in the shower and you're used to getting in my case, I've got very thick Indian black hair. So this big ball of black hair and suddenly no hair falls out. You know, the itching skin and the those were some of the things. And then the other stuff, I made me realise how hard I had always been on my body and how hard I think women are on their bodies, mostly because of the way society polices them, really. And so, you know, I'd been always kind of, it's too fat, it's too thin, I'm too Indian, I'm not Indian enough, my nose is too big, my hair's too curly, no, it's too straight. You know, the list just was never ending. And then I got pregnant and just suddenly, I think, saw the strength of it and the capacity of it. In a way, the kind of uncomplaining ease of how it just stretched month by month and became huge, and how well it coped with this massive invasion. And I felt really, really proud of it. And actually, you know, I'm sort of almost ashamed to say it, but in a way, that was the first time in my life at the age of 34 that I felt really, really proud of my body.
Yeah, well, isn't that an interesting thing?
And kind of sad as well, isn't it?
Yeah. The other thing is that despite, you know, the busyness of our lives, despite all the labour-saving devices we've ever invented, a pregnancy can't be made more efficient, can it? It can't be speeded up.
No, that's right. And I sort of love the stubbornness of that, you know, the difficulty of it. I mean, I'm saying that as a writer, I think actually as a person, a woman living it, it could be hellish. And there's moments in pregnancy where you feel trapped in the experience and this kind of ascent. You know, I started to think of it as a journey, really. And I don't mean that in the kind of therapeutic, we all just need to go on a journey kind of sense, but actually putting on your boots and going out for a walk, because all of the stages of that, you know, once you get halfway through and you have that kind of sinking feeling of it's too late to turn back, I've just got to keep going now, but if I could turn back, I maybe would. And then this idea of an ascent, the peak at the top, which, you know, in the case of pregnancy is, of course, labour. And I think in a first pregnancy, that is the great unknown and this sort of terror and thrill awaiting you at the end of it.
Online, mobile, and on air at RN, this is The Body Sphere. I'm Amanda Smith, speaking with Chitra Ramaswamy. She set herself the task of trying to describe the embodied experience of being pregnant, not as an expert, just as one going through it. Generally, I think that our bodies have evolved in a really brilliantly designed and engineered way, except, I wonder, with pregnancy and childbirth, where it seems to me we do have a kind of design fault. Did that ever cross your mind during those 9 months?
Not during the 9 months, but definitely during my labour. I wouldn't even say during my labour, because it's a kind of place beyond rational thought when you're in labour, but certainly afterwards. because my labour was very complicated. I adopted for a home birth and intended to have a home birth and ended up having a cesarean section. So I think afterwards, in those kind of early weeks when the baby is in your arms and on your chest and feeding from your body, if you decide and are able to breastfeed, you do start to think about what's happened to you and how it might have been different if you had a complex labour as I did. And I think so much of this stuff, unfortunately, it's become such a kind of battleground. Every time pregnancy or birth hits the headlines in the UK, it's always kind of talking about the numbers of women having C-sections, and just it's always spoken about in quite kind of negative or sometimes quite kind of blaming and shaming terms, instead of actually talking about the psychological impact of how you happen to give birth, even if you have a very uncomplicated natural birth. And actually, so many women who I know who have had those births get really irate at them being called uncomplicated, because every birth, no matter how it goes, is complicated. So I don't know. I don't think that women's bodies are engineered to not be able to do it or to be able to do it. I think it's just an incredibly difficult thing to do. And it always has been, which is why for many centuries, women died in childbirth, and in many parts of the world continue to do so. You know, we are lucky, any of us who grow up in a society where medical interventions like C-sections are on the table and an option for us, because, you know, I did have moments after the baby was born of thinking, my goodness, if they hadn't been able to cut me open and take that baby out, what would have happened to us?
Well, certainly the biggest events of our lives are difficult to describe, aren't they? You quote Toni Morrison, the African-American writer, who said, "Birth, life and death each took place on the hidden side of a leaf."
Yeah, I love that quote. I think what I found fascinating about even trying to write this was just how sort of unwritable it was as an experience. And in a way, maybe that's why it hasn't been written about, one of the reasons anyway. And there are these massive things in life, aren't there? Whether it's birth or death or love or war, you know, the experience of them is so kind of beyond words that we don't end up using them. And so this project was an attempt to use, to harness the power of words to tell the story of this experience. And I love that idea that in pregnancy, there are moments that actually they take place on the hidden side, on the underside of the leaf. You know, the part of the leaf that actually we don't really look at and that we don't see as being beautiful. And that's what the truth of pregnancy is. We don't say it, but for 9 months, you're kind of let in on that secret, the kind of mystery, really, without getting too high-handed about it. The mystery of how we all got here. It's mind-blowing. Hearing the baby's heartbeat for the first time, the leaf turned over again, and I was briefly permitted another look, to dwell on the mystery of living with two heartbeats knocking out their rhythms inside me. Could they hear one another? Did they communicate inside my body like siblings whispering in bed after lights out? What secrets did they speak? And would my heart get lonely when it was all over? I did not know how to articulate any of this, could barely understand how to feel it. I could only listen in.
Yet also, Chitra, in this time of creating new life, of hearing it inside you, you also dwelt on death. Is that inevitable, do you think?
I think it is. And I think until I got pregnant, I sort of thought of them as two completely polarized opposites. You know, you've got birth on one side, death on the other, and then in between, the life. And actually, when I was pregnant, I sort of realized that the two things are kind of rubbing up against each other all the time. I found quickening, the moment when you first feel the baby moving inside you, to be the sort of perfect demonstration of that, because it's the moment when you first feel the baby move. It's a really sort of iconic moment in pregnancy. But I spent a lot of that time worrying about it not moving. So whenever the baby was not moving, or when I was indeed waiting for him to start moving or to be able to feel it, I I meditated a lot on death and I worried a lot about death. And I think bringing life into the world, you have to grapple both with the possibility of your own death and that of your baby. And I wanted to say that and say that it's, you know, it's okay. It's okay to be thinking about death when you're growing life.
But also, as a visibly pregnant woman, people tell you stuff, don't they? They tell you their sorrows.
Yeah. So I think there is something about this experience that maybe it goes back to what we were saying earlier about the kind of unspeakable nature of it. Once you do start speaking, you realise that everyone is actually dying to talk and to spill their secrets. And I really found that as I became more and more visibly pregnant and started walking around the world, I was astounded at how much license that gave me to become this kind of container for other people's secrets as well. And so at work, a colleague who, you know, I never really spoke to, saw me on the other side of the building, you know, my silhouette. And then when I got back to my desk, there was an email from her basically saying, you know, she was in her early 40s, she'd had a miscarriage, she'd come to sort of realize she was never going to have children, and it was heartbreaking for her. And, you know, I would never have received that email. Similarly, I went to the GP early on in my pregnancy when I had a rash, and the GP, which, you know, here you get 10-minute appointment and it's more usually like 5 minutes. You're just, you know, talked out of the door. These are very, very busy people under massive stress. And yet, you know, my GP suddenly started waxing lyrical about her 3 children and about her divorce. You know, I just sort of suddenly realized that actually, you're in this very privileged and weird position for 9 months, and it's like the world knows that and starts to talk to you. The most poignant example was definitely I got a train from Edinburgh to London for work quite late on in my pregnancy. It was my last trip to London, which is actually where I'm from, where I was born, before the baby came. And there was a man who sat next to me on the train who happened to be terminally ill. And we ended up having this extraordinary conversation on the way to London that I certainly would not have been privy to had I not have been pregnant. That was why he chose to talk to me.
Tell me why you think that is, though.
I think it's because the pregnant woman is both historically and culturally seen as this sort of container of information and secret sort of wisdom. It's not really true. And in actual fact, you know, in some ways you never feel more stupid than when you're pregnant. And yet you are harboring life. You are doing this very, very curious thing. And I think people look at you in a very different way and they want to talk to you. I wonder if also it makes people connect with their own senses of self and mortality. You know, maybe they can see their fetal selves in your bump. Just the very fact that you're walking around growing a life, it's like a story that's being written on your belly by everybody else.
You're listening to The Body Sphere, Amanda Smith with you, in conversation with Chitra Ramaswamy, the author of Expecting, The Inner Life of Pregnancy. Well, the other thing that being pregnant does is it makes you feel more, or can make you feel more connected to and part of your own family line, and in your case, curious about your parents who were both born in India. Could you read for us about this?
Absolutely. One does not have to go far back in one's own history to find a baby born at home. My mother entered the world in the same house in which her mother was born. Like most people, she knows virtually nothing about her birth. I asked her and my father, each in their 70s, about their births, and not only did I discover that both had a grandmother who had died in childbirth, but that they hadn't known this about each other, despite being married for almost 40 years. In fact, it was clear that neither of them had spoken about their births before. And why would they? It's a curious fact of life that our births remain as unavailable to us as our deaths. There may be people we can ask, but we do not. Perhaps we prefer not to know. Perhaps the silencing of pregnancy and labour is so engulfing, it's passed on to the child at the moment of birth. The pact is drawn up. The one who was born will never ask, and the one who birthed will never tell. Or perhaps we do not understand our gestations and births as events at all. I just was so fascinated and almost fascinated more that I had not known any of this stuff, because I'd never really sat down and said to my mum and dad, you know, how were you born? It's such a simple question that I think we never ask, and it yields the most fascinating stories.
All right, so you're into the third trimester now, and as your parents had been, you wanted your baby to be born at home. Actually, as you've mentioned, when it came to the birth, it was a sort of melodrama in three acts. You were overdue, so the midwife, Sarah, suggested a sweep. Explain that.
Yeah, so again, something about pregnancy that I didn't know anything about is if you are overdue, which, you know, in itself is a very complicated thing to say because it's such an imprecise science, due dates. And there's all sorts of stuff around whether 43 weeks should be a better indicator and so forth. But anyway, 42 weeks pregnant I was by the time I gave birth, so right to the end. And about a week before that, my midwife offered me a membrane sweep, which is basically where it's like a procedure just done by the midwife, not a doctor. And they insert two fingers into your vagina and they sweep around the cervix. And it releases all these hormones that may or may not kickstart labour. And I had heard about this procedure earlier on in my pregnancy and, you know, had been so sort of like, well, if labour's going to happen anyway, why would you need to kickstart it? You know, the baby will come when it needs to. I had that sort of hippie mentality. What I didn't realise was quite what waiting for a baby to come out of your body for days and days and days and being massively underslept and feeling huge and very angry would do to you. So, you know, by the time I was 42 weeks pregnant, I had actually had three of these membrane sweeps. I've never really met anyone who's had more of them, to be honest. It was like I was addicted to them. My body, at least, was beginning to think about labour, even if I had yet to feel a contraction. Then something else made me gasp in shock. "I can feel your baby's head," Sarah said, with her finger still inside me, for all I knew, stroking it through the amniotic sac. I was stunned, though it was the most obvious of facts. There is a baby right there between my legs, and I had carried this information around for 9 months. You would think it had ripened into a fact by now, but it still blew me away. There he was, suspended between my legs. A few centimetres of my body now separated me from pregnancy and motherhood, from one person and two. He was so nearly in the world, it seemed preposterous that he didn't simply plop into it. "What's he like?" I asked, as though he was a man she had just met in a bar. "His head feels lovely and smooth," was her intriguing reply.
So, Chitra, how old is your son now?
He's 2.
And would you like him, when he's grown up, to read this story of his gestation?
He'll probably think it's absolutely disgusting, won't he? which is perfectly reasonable. I don't know is the honest answer, but I did definitely feel a responsibility to him writing it. And I didn't, as much as I wanted this to be a very intimate and truthful memoir, I really didn't want to overshare. I felt like there was a way of talking about this experience in a more kind of universal way that wasn't going to overshare the details of not just my life, but that of my family and the child who's born at the end of the book.
Chitra Ramaswamy is the author of Expecting, The Inner Life of Pregnancy. The publisher is Saraband, and details for it are online. I'm Amanda Smith, and I have to tell you that this is the final ever episode of The Body Sphere. It's been a huge joy to make this program for you over the past 5 years. All of them are online if you want to revisit any of the programs or share them with others.